97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
Welcome back to the Mark Reardon Show. Brad Young sitting in today for the vacationing Mark Reardon. And one of the reasons why I love sitting in here is that I get to talk to people that I would love to talk to in a bar after work, but I get to do it here, and I love doing that. And this is one of those guys. We're going to talk to Nick Kengetis, and he's the assistant managing editor of MRC, you know, Media Research Center. And he talked about an article. He came out, rather, with an article that really appeals to me, and it's talking about the season, this rioting season. And Nick, welcome to 97.1 FM Talk.
Thanks for having me, Brad.
Well, in fact, this was already in my stack of stuff, Nick, to talk about today, even before I knew that I was going to get a chance to talk to you. And that is that the anti-Israel protesters, pro-Hamas, pro-terrorism protesters, are back in action, apparently. Tell us about what's going on at the University of Washington.
Well, specifically at the University of Washington, apparently Antifa, our favorite black bloc crew of anti-fascist fascists, they apparently set up an encampment. They set multiple fires to, I think, three or four different dumpsters in order to blockade so that they could set up temporary, I don't know, encampment for themselves in the interdisciplinary engineering department. Oh. And the cops, I guess, really didn't do much to deter them. The authorities and the firefighters and all that, they tried to get them to leave, but it just kind of, I guess, upset them more. And so it's at, like I said, it's at the University of Washington, and Antifa does what Antifa does. They, you know, they wear their masks because they don't want to have accountability because they don't believe in accountability. And while they call everybody else fascists while being fascists.
What? So, you mean it's not all because they're concerned about COVID? What? Really? I'm shocked. Shocked, I say.
You know, the reason I said it was rioting season again. The reason I said it was rioting season again is because I've covered protests, whether it's Antifa, whether it's at universities, whether it's at the Capitol in D.C. They don't come out when there's even a hint of rain outside, or even if it's below, I would say, 60 degrees. It's almost like they're the Wicked Witch and the Wizard of Oz, and they'll melt or something. I don't know. The funny thing is that they'll carry umbrellas so that you can't film them, but they don't feel like using them when there's inclement weather. They don't even show up when there's inclement weather.
Right.
So when the weather starts turning to spring and summer, you know the crazy crazies are going to start coming out of the woodwork.
Well, you know why, and by the way, we're talking to Nick Kengetis and from the Media Research Center. And Nick, you know the reason why they don't show up when it rains is because that's too close to taking a shower. I mean, these people are afraid to take a shower. They're afraid of personal hygiene. And if they walk out in the rain, it might actually clean them a little bit. Could that be what's behind their fear of rain?
I think it's just, you know, like I mentioned a minute ago, they're as evil as the Wicked Witch of the West, where they don't want to melt. These people, I've dealt with Antifa face to face multiple times over the years, and they will freely admit to you that not only are they communists, but they're atheists.
Yes, they will.
And the funny thing is that if you're unafraid of them, unless they have 15 or more of them in a group, I'm a big guy, so they don't mess with me. But I know of colleagues that if they don't have 15 or more people, they're not going to mess with you because one-on-one, they're nobody.
Right. Exactly. But in a group, all of a sudden they feel emboldened. But here's one of the things.
Mob mentality.
Yes, exactly. And that mob mentality gives them some sort of testicular fortitude. But here's what I want to get to, though. Here's what I want to get to, Nick. And that's this. We're here in St. Louis. I went to church in Ferguson for 30 years. So we were the hotbed, obviously, in Ferguson with the Michael Brown situation. And after the George Floyd situation right here in St. Louis, we had encampments at Washington University, at St. Louis University. And here was the thing that I pointed out, and I want to get your take on this. I pointed out, as people would call in, and I was live on the air, and we were talking about free speech, and people kept saying free speech. But although people have a right to free speech, they don't have a right to occupy private property, to encamp on college campuses, which is private property, and to block Jewish students from exercising their rights to go to classes unless they renounce their faith, which was something that actually happened at, I believe it was UCLA or USC in California. But have you actually seen that situation where the protesters mistakenly believe that they have a right to an encampment under the First Amendment?
I think that these protesters, activists, whatever you want to call them, they will do whatever is expedient to their narrative or agenda. It does not matter how anybody else feels about it. Those same people that will argue to you free speech are the same ones that'll say, yes, but not freedom from consequences. But then when you flip it on them, all of a sudden, oh, you're infringing on my rights while they try to take away everybody else's rights. It's a bunch of bull. It's all performative. It's all for attention because they weren't hugged enough when they were a kid, and it gets to the point. Like I said, I've covered dozens and dozens and dozens of protests over the years, and these people are so they'll be at a protest, and it's supposed to be for a certain issue, and then out of nowhere, they'll start talking about 38 different issues. And you're like, no wonder you guys never get anything done and you're constantly protesting because you can't even focus on one thing for more than 5 minutes.
Absolutely. We're talking to Nick Kengadis. He's with the Media Research Center. And Nick, you said something a few moments ago that I want to follow up on, and that's this. You mentioned that a lot of these are socialists, communists, and atheists. And it's been my experience over the years in talking to a lot of these agitators, these protesters, these really professional protesters that just go from place to place to stir up trouble. When you get right down to it, even though ostensibly they may, like, for example, here at University of Washington, they may be protesting against Israel and they may call this an anti-Israel protest. But isn't it true that when you peel all the histrionics away, when you get down to the bottom line, why are they here? Aren't these types of protesters, bottom line, about disrupting society and overturning our American culture?
Absolutely, 100%. It's what I call the flavor of the week. Unfortunately, they have activism ADHD. So it doesn't. It could change day to day. You're not even sure once you actually show up to a protest to talk to these people, you're not even sure it's the same protest anymore.
Right. And the only thing that I will give credit, because as we've covered all of these types of protests, whether it was looting, we had a situation right here in St. Louis. I was on the air and watching out the window of the radio station. Active looting going on during one of the protests that happened here when a police officer in St. Louis was acquitted when people wanted him to be convicted. And they were literally rooting. They were literally rioting and looting these stores and taking out armfuls of goods. And I thought, you know, I don't think you're protesting against police brutality by stealing tennis shoes and sneakers. I don't know what those two things have in common. But one thing that they do have in common is if you're against the entire capitalist society where people are actually required to do something and you don't rely on the government to do everything for you, that seems to be at the base, the thing that fuels all of these individuals.
Well, and the funny thing is with a lot of these, and most of them are kids, like I'm talking between, I would say, 18 and 25, most of them come from middle to upper class families. And like I said, a lot of them, it's just a cry for attention because they weren't hugged enough as a kid because they probably had a nanny and their parents were never home or they were skiing in Stade or something. And you don't know where to go with these people because, for like I said previously, from one minute to the next, it's like activism ADHD. They don't even know half the time what they're talking about.
Mm-hmm. Hey, I want to get to one particular point here before we let you go, because as I've covered this type of story over the years here in St. Louis and elsewhere, talking about how all of the various protesting groups, one of the things that frustrated me, particularly when it comes to universities, is the university's fear of taking any action. They wouldn't go in and break up an encampment. They wouldn't go in and arrest individuals who were breaking private property laws. They would not do anything. They just stood by and said, oh, there's nothing we can do. It's free speech. When, as we've already talked about, it's not. But here's my question. At least from the coverage that I've read regarding the University of Washington, it seems like eventually police were allowed on campus. I read where at least 30 of the protesters were actually arrested, and the university took a stance. Now, we may debate whether they took a stance quickly enough or early enough, but do you see any movement on college campuses from the administration standpoint today, any movement towards restoring some degree of law and order instead of allowing these communist atheists to run our college campuses?
Well, I mean, in terms of the specificity of the University of Washington case, I know that from, you know, following up on it and everything, supposedly the very next day, Riley Gaines, the yes, activist swimmer, this is according to reports, this hasn't been verified, but supposedly these protesters were throwing feces and calling them all kinds of names and everything. So whether they were eventually arrested or not, they're just going to be let out again, because in areas in states like Washington and Oregon, they get basically they want to be arrested, basically, because they want the optic of being the victim.
Correct.
So even if they're arrested and they're held in jail for what, a day, they're just going to be let out. They're going to do it again. I've seen it time after time, protest to protest. It's the same people at every protest.
Hmm. Yes, and they go from protest to protest. I know right here in St. Louis a few years ago that the majority of those who were arrested during Michael Brown protests and anniversary of Michael Brown protests, the majority of those arrested were from people that were not even from Missouri or Illinois. They were from...
No, they're bussed in.
They were bussed in for these type of events.
And a lot of times, like, for example, a few years ago, I covered a protest in front of the Trump building in Washington, D.C., the Trump Hotel. And basically, there was supposed to be a protest there. And all it was, essentially, was a big photo op. The SEIU, the union, bussed in like 30 people. They took a picture with their banner so that they had the photo op. And then they left. And that was it.
Wow. It was truly only a media event then.
Yes.
Unbelievable. We're talking to Nick Kangatis. And Nick, if folks want to follow stuff that you write and how you cover these types of ridiculous protests that are really done to subvert the American culture, how can folks follow you online?
My X handle, Twitter, whatever you want to call it, is at TJTAW44, which stands for Truth, Justice, and the American Way.
I love
it. And then the website is MRCTV. Media Research Center is the overarching organization. I work for the MRCTV division. We're a little edgier, and we talk about basically everything. So you can find me at MRCTV.org.
Very good. Nick Kangatis, thanks for joining us here on 97.1 FM Talk.
Thanks for having me, Brad.
Great to talk to you, sir. Yeah, and that's one of the things that at the bottom line in all of this, and I'm talking to you now from a legal perspective, that the right to free speech does not give you the right to break laws. You got to remember that even going back to Martin Luther King, Martin Luther King was fighting against unjust laws. But his point was, is that I want to be arrested for this, not just to make a splash, but I want to be arrested and stand up for what I believe in, because I want to show that these laws are unjust. And certainly in situation with Martin Luther King, a lot of those laws were unjust, unlike the protesters of today that are not. But my point is this, the arresting is part of the package. It's part of the process. And yet so many of these universities are afraid to go in and arrest people because they say, oh, right to free speech. But free speech does not entail the right to an encampment. It does not entail the right to burn down buildings. I mean, think about it. You saw this on the news in multiple occasions over the past decade where reporters would be standing in front of a building burning building. They would literally be standing in front of a burning building, and they would tell you that this is mostly a peaceful protest. You can't say it's a peaceful protest if you're standing in front of a burning building. It's not a peaceful protest by definition. And yet the media tries to tell us, oh, it's peaceful, it's peaceful. It's not peaceful if there's looting. It's not peaceful if there's an encampment. It's not peaceful if they're discriminating against Jewish students. And it's not a free speech in any way by taking over public, private property. That's not free speech. That's called a felony or a misdemeanor. And I still to this day think that if you want to break up those encampments, here's what you do. You block the pizza deliveries. You know, if Domino's and Papa John's and Pizza Hut could not deliver pizzas into an encampment, that thing would break apart in 3 hours. I'm convinced of that because those guys got to eat, right? So you just block the food from coming in. They're going to leave eventually, kind of like relatives that hang around your house too long. You stop feeding them, they disappear. You don't even have to arrest them. Just stop feeding them. And I also have this idea that those encampments are not only oftentimes they say, well, we're Jewish-free zones, but I'll bet you it's a deodorant-free zone, too, if you know what I'm talking about. Brad Young sitting in for Mark Reardon. We're going to take a break, and we've got more right after this on 97.1 FM Talk. Welcome back to the Mark Reardon Show. Brad Young sitting in here. Last two segments here on the Reardon Show. Mark will be back tomorrow, so make sure you wake the kids and phone the neighbors. Mark will be back here tomorrow at 3 o'clock. In the meantime, I get the pleasure to talk to Steve Gorman. Steve is the executive director of the Climate Science Coalition of America, author of four books on energy and climate, including his new book, The Green Breakdown, The Coming Renewable Energy Failure. Steve Gorham, welcome to 97.1 FM Talk.
Hey, Brad. Great to join you today.
Great to talk to you. This is an issue that's also near and dear to my heart, because as I think about all of the, and we'll talk about renewable energy failure in just a second, but when I think about all of the broken promises that we've heard from the progressive left over the last 30 years, 35, 40 years, about how Antarctica would be gone, the Arctic would be gone, that there would be no more snowfall, it'd be a thing of the past. And yet, even though each and every one of these promises have proven to be false, we still hear these renewed promises that have just as much validity, in my mind, as the millions of broken promises that we've heard before now.
Yeah, it is remarkable. Al Gore said the Arctic ice is going to disappear in 2014. I mean, just on and on with these things. And I do document those in my books. We've had a little gentle warming, about 1 degree in 140 years, one
yes.
degree Celsius. But it's been warmer in the past many, many times. An example is a glacier in central Switzerland that is melting. But as it pulls back, they find horse bridles and wagon wheels and 4,000-year-old wood. And this glacier wasn't there thousands of years ago. It was warmer then than it is today. So, yeah, all the climate scare really is based on computer models and a lot of misinformation. And we're seeing the Trump administration right now just kind of tear apart all of this climate stuff. He isn't saying much, but, man, all the programs and the funding is just dropping.
Yeah. In fact, in my stack of stuff that I have right here in front of me, Steve, one of the stories I was going to get to on the show today that I didn't have time, but for you, was this story about how four major glaciers in the Arctic right now, the Wilkes Land, Antarctic, I'm sorry, the Antarctic.
Yep.
We've got the Wilkes Land, Queen Mary Land region of East Antarctica, that they reverse their pattern of accelerated mass loss from 2011 to 2020 and are now showing mass gain during the 21 to 23 period. How can that happen if there was supposed to be no Arctic or Antarctic because of global warming?
Yeah, the Antarctic has been a big sore spot in the whole climatism theory. Temperatures haven't changed much. They've been flat for many, many years. Matter of fact, the United States station, we've had a station down there for about 60 years, and the first station was buried in snow, so they had to build another one. The snow has been rising about 8 inches a year in Antarctica, right in the center. And it snows every year, and it never melts, and it just keeps rising and rising. So now the last station was built on stilts so that they can jack it up over increasing snowfall. So that's the Antarctica is a big problem with the whole theory.
We are talking to Steve Gorman. He's the Executive Director of Climate Science Coalition of America, author of the book The Green Breakdown, The Coming Renewable Energy Failure. And I want to ask you about that, Steve, but I just got to tell you this anecdote. I find it so funny that on multiple occasions over the past 20 years that there have been hearings, global warming hearings in Washington, D.C. that have been postponed due to snowfall. I just find that to be hilarious that we have to cancel the global warming hearings because of snowfall.
That has happened. And then for a while there, wherever Mr. Former Vice President Gore was speaking, they had to be canceling things because of the weather and because of the snow. So, yeah, it's kind of crazy. But, you know, the only sensible policy is to adapt to the climate.
Yes.
And like Netherlands has been doing for hundreds of years, building seawalls and islands. If we all think we can drive electric cars and stop the oceans from rising, then we better get some better advice.
Well, I did see a bumper sticker. I am not making this up. I saw a bumper sticker that said, "I use no oil. I drive an electric car." And I thought, you moron, when you plug in your car into your house, if the power generation facility is using oil or natural gas, you're using fossil fuels, you idiot. And I just had to chuckle. But I want to get to your book, because when you talk about the coming renewable energy failure, what comes to my mind right now is Spain. We saw Spain having this critical failure when it comes to lights are out, power is out, they're having power generation issues, and yet Spain bought in to this lie, this fiction that says if we just convert over to renewable energy, it'll solve all of our energy problems. Is this part of the problem that Spain is dealing with because they're relying on renewable energy?
Yeah, absolutely. Last week they had 60 million people in Spain and Portugal without power for more than 12 hours. And it was terrible. They had 35,000 people on trains that just stopped, these electric trains. And they were in the mountains and they were in tunnels and they were everywhere. They had people sleeping in subways trying to get places. Just terrible. And one of the problems with wind and solar, it's got a lot of issues like cost and land area required and intermittency. But there's also a lack of stability. When you have a nuclear and gas and coal plants,
yes,
they power these spinning turbines, and so if there's a minor change in the network, it doesn't affect it. And electrical networks have to balance supply and demand exactly all the time. And if you have something disrupt the network, then you can't turn up the wind, you can't turn up the solar, and the whole thing just collapsed in Spain. By the way, this was 2 weeks after they all crowed that they had 100% renewable electricity in one period of time, and then they had this huge blackout. So just a big black mark.
That's just as good as snowing, canceling a global warming seminar on that one. But I got to tell you, in full disclosure here, Steve, I own solar panels. They're not on my roof. Yep. I've got them in my garage. At my house, we have a lot of trees, and occasionally trees fall and knock out the power. I don't want to lose what's in the freezer and the refrigerator. So I've got solar panels that power a battery that are backup. All right. But you're right. It's not that I'm anti-solar energy, but the idea that somehow that if you are green, that it takes on an element, to my mind, of religion. where you say that the Savior is like Al Gore, who's preaching this green philosophy. Your sins involve the fact that you've used fossil fuels in the past, and the way to salvation is paved with solar panels and green energy. And yet that is a fiction, isn't it?
Well, it really is. The climate is dominated by nature, not human emissions. We may have 20 or 30 years of cooling go through. It's very tough to predict the future. But you're right, we've got all these rules like don't have kids, don't eat meat. I mean, just on and on and on. And right now, though, the thing is, Mr. Trump is cutting all this. He is slashing programs at NOAA and NASA. The climate models themselves, the heart of global warming alarmism, may be cut. We have Pete Hegseth in the Navy, who says we don't do a climate, and you won't use the word, but stuff. And, you know.
Thank you. FCC thanks you.
And he's just cutting all of this stuff. And they wanted electric tanks on the battlefield, and they had plans to build chargers and send them out on battlefields. I mean, it was just lunacy.
I know, because listen, as you well know, Steve, the Army, our military forces have two jobs. Kill people and break things, right? That's what they do.
Much.
They kill people and they break things. It's not a social experiment. It's not a way to reform society. It's not a method to save the planet. It's a way to kill people and break things. And by trying to go to this green energy nonsense, really that just gets in the way of those two priorities.
Well, it's also a waste that we wasted more than $100 billion in taxpayer money. By the way, here's one for one of Elon Musk's list. The Navy crowed in their own literature about a project they did studying climate change with the government of Vietnam and the Mekong Delta. Now, tell me how that helps Navy preparedness.
I mean, so
there's all this stuff's going on. Taxpayer money's being wasted, and now Mr. Trump is cutting it out.
Oh, and that is a fantastic thing. Steve Gorman, author of the book Green Breakdown, The Coming Renewable Energy Failure. You've written several books, haven't you, on this nonsense of, and again, I'm not trying to suggest that using solar panels is nonsense because I use them. But my idea and my point here is that this overt reliance on green energy is foolhardy, it's costly, and it doesn't even achieve the goals because, for example, the environmental damage that comes from mining the lithium that's used in car batteries for electric cars, doesn't that cause in of itself enormous environmental damage?
Yeah, there's big damage. It may reduce CO2 emissions, and again, those don't have much of an effect. And I'm not against solar. If you're getting a great subsidy from the government of the state, it might be really good. If you're in Hawaii, where it's always sunny and always windy, wind and solar are good. But, you know, if you're in Minnesota, it doesn't make a lot of sense. So,
no.
And the other thing is, it's not going to stop the planet from warming. I mean, that's just goofy.
Yes. And my other thing that really gets me, Steve, and this is why I'm glad I could talk to you today, is that this idea that the environmentalists want to shut down literally any energy-producing entity in the United States. But even if we went black, even if we went totally zero electrical output, zero fossil fuel output, when you look at the natural warming trend that occurs outside of man-made influences, combined with the possibility that China and India and other countries are still polluting the atmosphere, we could shut down the United States and it wouldn't make a nickel's worth of difference, would it?
It would probably not be measurable. Yeah, the only sensible thing is adaptation, building strong buildings to withstand hurricanes, building seawalls, those sorts of things, but not trying to stop the planet from warming. There's no evidence that we can do that.
No, there's no evidence at all. I want to just ask you another question here. You've written a lot of books on this type of green energy nonsense. Just briefly tell us some of the other books that you've written.
Yeah, a real good one for anybody who's got kids in school, and especially high school, eighth grade and up. They're getting a very one-sided point of view about the climate.
Oh, yes.
Illinois just said we got to put climate change in all the schools, the governor and the legislature. But I have a great book called The Mad, Mad, Mad World of Climatism. And that will give them, it's got polar bears in a Mazda on the cover. But that will give them a balance, and they should get that to their kids and their aunts and their nephews and all that sort of thing. There are four books. They're very readable, color paperbacks. They have some great sidebars. Green Breakdown had 150 colored sidebars in it, and one of them was about how you should, a New York Times article that said you should marry short people to help stop climate change. I'm sorry, you should mate with short people.
Oh, my goodness. The lunacy continues. You mentioned polar bears, Steve, and I find it ironic that the left has grasped the polar bears as the iconography of saving the environment, because the polar bear population, any problems with the food or the resources for polar bears comes right now from too many polar bears, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's almost tripled since 1970, and a lot of it is because we put hunting laws in the northern nations. They stopped shooting so many polar bears. And so we used to have about 8,000 or 10,000. Now we've got almost 30,000 polar bears. So they're not in any danger. It's just another prediction from climatism that did not come true.
Unbelievable. Steve Gorman, I want to thank you so much for hanging out with us today. The author of Green Breakdown, The Coming Renewable Energy Failure. Thanks for taking time out of your schedule here to hang out with us here at 97.1 FM Talk.
Thank you, Brad.
Oh, my pleasure talking to you, Steve. Hey, we're going to take a break a little bit early. I want to give a little extra time in the next segment, Ethan. We've got the audio cut of the day, but I also want to leave time to talk about the Supreme Court decision that came down late yesterday regarding whether Trump can issue an executive order related to banning transgender members in the military. Cover that next. Brad Young, Mark Reardon Show. Stick around. Here we are sliding into the last segment here on the Mark Reardon Show. Brad Young, having a great time hanging out with the cool kids, being here on 97.1. Enjoy it a lot. Thanks for listening. Been getting a lot of good comments on our YouTube channel, and I appreciate all of those. I try to respond in between segments. So if you want to check that out, you can just go to YouTube, put in Mark Reardon, and you can find the YouTube channel live. Not that you want to see me, because you don't. There's a reason why I'm on radio. But one of the things that I wanted to get to before the segment was over was yesterday the Supreme Court issued an opinion yesterday afternoon that literally cleared the way for the Trump administration to enforce a Department of Justice policy that prohibits transgender people from serving in the U.S. military. And this is something that Biden had reversed. It was prior to the Biden administration. That was the policy. And then shortly after taking office in 2021, then President Joe Biden signed an executive order that allowed transgender troops to serve openly in the military. Now, we can argue and we can debate about whether or not that's a good policy or not. OK, because one can take that argument. I tend to fall into the category that says esprit de corps. Esprit de corps is a term and a concept that says that fighting soldiers, they work as a unit. They work as brothers or sisters, and they get together, and that they have a common goal, and they're able to fight with one another, not fight with one another, but alongside of one another to fight the enemy. Right. And if you've got a transgender person in that group, that's going to upset what we call esprit de corps. And so I don't have a problem excluding people who are transgender, but that's a debate that we can have. Here's the reason why I'm bringing this issue up. I've heard a lot of people trying to say to me, Brad, you're an attorney. Isn't it illegal for Trump to ban people based upon their transgender status? And that's where I have to say, no, it's not. I've said this for a long time, and I'm glad the Supreme Court backed me up yesterday. But here's the idea you need to understand, and that is this. During when it comes to the military, rather, the president has paramount authority as to how the military works. That's why in the Constitution, it says that the president is the commander-in-chief of the military, first. Secondly, the argument against banning transgender people from the military falls under the 14th Amendment Equal Protection Clause. And the argument goes like this. Under that Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment, people cannot be treated differently. They have to be treated equally under the law. So therefore, the argument goes, if you're in the military and you're transgender, then you have to be treated like everyone else. Here's where that legal argument falls apart. People in the military don't have the same constitutional protections that the rest of us do. Think about it. If you're in the military and the drill sergeant says, drop and give me 20, and you say, you know, I don't really want to do that. I'm going to go hang out with my buddies at the bar and exercise my freedom of association and drink at the bar instead of doing push-ups for you, you sorry drill sergeant. what's going to happen to that individual? They're going to prison, all right? Because you don't have freedom of association. If you're told in the Army, I want you to go and dig that ditch, and you say, nah, I'd rather have a desk job, you're going to prison because freedom of association doesn't apply to you. If you're in the military and you say, I hate the president, I hate you, drill sergeant, I hate the generals, you all are scum suckers and you should die and go to Hades, you're going to jail because the First Amendment doesn't apply to those in the military. So if I give you all of these examples, how the rights and privileges that you and I enjoy don't necessarily apply to those in the military, then why should the 14th Amendment Equal Protection Clause apply when the First Amendment itself does not apply to those in the military? Secondly, think about during COVID. During COVID, President Biden tried to make everyone in America get forcibly vaccinated against COVID, and the court struck it down. You cannot require and force individuals to undergo a vaccine. Aha! But in 2022, a group of Navy SEALs sued and said, we don't want to get the vaccine because we're Navy SEALs. The Supreme Court ruled wrong. You have to get the vaccine because the military is at the direction and control of the commander in chief. So if you hear that policy coming out here, remember that the people in the military, God bless them, they're out there protecting your rights, but they don't have the same rights as do you and I because of where they are in the military. Hey, I want to take time now to get to the audio cut of the day.
Stand by. Playback ready. Now, the audio cut of the day.
We're going to go with number 16.
The world has been coming to the U.S., and China has been the missing piece. And, you know, look, we have shared interest that this isn't sustainable, as I said before, especially on the Chinese side. And, you know, 145%, 125% is the equivalent of an embargo. We don't want to decouple. What we want is fair trade.
Countries are coming to the negotiating table, just as Trump predicted. It's happening now. Brad Young sitting in for Mark Reardon, who will be back tomorrow. Thanks for listening to 97.1 FM Talk.
Get more at 97.1talk.com.